All right, if you've got your Bible with you, I encourage you to turn it to the letter of James. I think it's in your worship guide as well, and it'll be on the screen. But before we hear it read to us this morning, let me just give you a news flash. Are you ready? News flash? The Bible was written by hundreds, maybe even thousands of contributors. And guess what? They don't agree with one another. There are conflicting opinions. There are different ways of going about relating to the divine. There are all kinds of inconsistencies in ideas in the Bible. And that's important. And I think the people that compiled the Bible were brilliant because they put those known inconsistencies in so that we could continue the conversation, so that nobody could say definitively, this is the way it is for time and eternity. People can say, hey, well, this is what I read here. And someone else can say, this is what I read here. And so we keep the conversation going. We keep a balance going. And so we have the book of James. And James was written literally to offer an alternative voice to that crazy guy we call Paul, right? Paul said, we are saved by faith alone and not by any good works that we do, period. End of story. God has taken the initiative and has loved us first, and that's what grace means. Grace means I don't deserve this love that I'm receiving, this grace. We are not saved by what we do. We are saved by what God has done for us. Does that sound familiar? Right? That's the whole Pauline shtick. But evidently, some Christians in the first century were already saying, wow, well, if religion is about grace, then guess what? I don't have to do anything. I'm free to do whatever I want. I mean, I'm reminded of the story about the guy who went to heaven, and he got to the pearly gates, and St. Peter met him there at the pearly gates and, you know, started to roll into the exam portion of the greeting. And St. Peter said, so I want to ask you, did you obey the Ten Commandments? And the guy kind of looked shocked, and he said, well, no. But I believed in them, right? I mean, and that kind of seems to be the operative way we go about things, right? Oh, I believe, but it doesn't necessarily have any bearing on a lot of people's lives. So if you'll go back with me to kind of the end of the first century, the late first century, maybe the early second century, and someone was seeking equal time for the idea of works. And this person, we don't know who it is, wrote the letter of James. And it's called a letter, but it's really a letter, that it's a sermon in letter form. And it's not addressed to any one church, because remember, in Paul's situation, he was usually responding to a problem that was existing in one of his churches, so he was writing a letter to get everybody to straighten up. This is a broad letter that's just sent out to anybody who claims to be in cahoots with these Jesus followers that are part of an allegiance to what that was beginning to be Christianity. And so the aim here is to counter the idea that religion is simply a matter of having faith, just about hearing the good news, sitting in church, listening to comforting words, or whatever it is you come to church for, about that's it's more than just that. In the middle of the text today, listen, because you'll hear a phrase that you have heard before. Be doers of the word and not... Some of you knows that, right? Let's try that again. Be doers of the word and not... hearers only, right? It kind of sums up the whole theme of the letter of James. It's about practical Christianity. It's about doing something with your religion and allowing your faith to transform your behavior. So let's listen to these challenging words from the letter of James.
James 2, 14 through 18, and James 1, 22 through 25 and 27. What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if you say you have faith but do not have works? Can faith save you? If a brother or sister is naked and lacks daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace, keep warm and eat your fill, and yet you do not supply their bodily needs, what is the good of that? So faith by itself, if it has no works, is dead. But someone will say, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith apart from your works, and I by my works will show you my faith. But be doers of the word, and not merely hearers who deceive themselves. For if any are hearers of the word and not doers, they are like those who look at themselves in a mirror. For they look at themselves and, on going away, immediately forget what they were like. But those who look into the perfect law, the law of liberty, and preserve, being not hearers who forget, but doers who act, they will be blessed in their doing. Religion that is pure and undefiled before God, the Father, is this: to care for orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep oneself unstained by the world. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
Let's pray. Loving and gracious Spirit, thank you for these words of wisdom that come to us from so long ago. May our hearts and our minds be open to hear these words for our lives today, so that none of us might leave this place unchanged. We gather as followers of Jesus. Amen. I'd like you to go back with me to July 2nd of 1982, when Larry Walters, who was a 33-year-old Californian, went down to the local Army surplus store and he bought himself 45 used weather balloons. Well, that afternoon, he strapped himself into a lawn chair, and that served as kind of his vehicle. There he is. And several of his friends tied the now helium-filled balloons to the lawn chair, and he took along a large bottle of soda. Good. A CB radio. Good. A parachute. Very smart. And a BB gun, figuring that when he was ready to come down, he could shoot the balloons one at a time, and then he would descend. Well, Walters was caught off guard when the chair shot to 16,000 feet, smack into the middle of the air traffic pattern of the Los Angeles International Airport. Now, imagine this. As fighter jets were scrambled, a TWA pilot coming in radioed into the tower and on approach confirmed that, yes, indeed, there was a guy in a lawn chair with a gun. Larry stayed airborne for more than 2 hours and forced the airport to shut down, which, of course, you know, for the afternoon in L.A., it caused all sorts of delays all across the country and across the Pacific because no planes could land at LAX. Well, he finally managed to shoot enough balloons that he descended and landed in Long Beach, California. And soon after, he was safely grounded, and I might add, cited by the police. Reporters asked him three questions. Number one, were you scared? Yes. Number two, would you do it again? No. And the third question is, why did you do it? And his answer was, because you can't just sit there. Right? Here's a picture of somebody, of Mark Berry, who now owns Larry's original lawn chair. There it is. Should be in the Smithsonian. You can't just sit there, can you? I mean, and yet Christians are often tempted, left and right, to be satisfied with just letting God's grace wash over them. And that's enough, right? That's enough. Just sit there, enjoy it. Martin Luther, the Martin Luther, hated the letter of James. He hated it. He called it the Epistle of Straw, and he actually tried to get it excluded from the Bible. He felt that James focused entirely too much on works to the detriment of the gift of God's grace. But it's good that James has a different agenda than Paul, or Luther for that matter. For James to focus on the gift of grace alone is to seriously misunderstand God's purposes. We are saved by faith, sure. But if you have faith and do not love your neighbor, your faith is, what did James said? Dead. It's dead. That's it. James brings it home emphatically in the middle of the passage there. James writes, if a brother or sister is ill-clad and in lack of daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace and be warmed and filled. You know, in other words, you know, that you give them some pious platitude, right? Without giving them the things that they actually need for their body, what good is it? It's no good. So faith by itself, if it has no works, is
dead.
Once you're dialed into the grace thing, once you get that, being a disciple is about doing what Jesus has taught you to do. It goes from grace to works. And I'm convinced that what passes for kind of one Christianity, people just think there's one Christianity in the world, is really two different religions. If you think about it, one of these religions encourages people to ask, what can God do for me? Right? You come and people are seeking, you know, hey, save me, give me victory, give me healing, make me prosperous and successful. I mean, everybody's got a long laundry list of what God can do for them. But on the other side, you've got another kind of Christianity that says, what can I do for God? Using my gifts to serve the less fortunate, to change the world for the better? You know, when someone asks you, are you saved? What they mean is, have you had a personal relationship, a personal experience of God's grace in your life so that you can accept Jesus as your personal Savior? What they don't ask is, are you actively involved in helping the poor in the world? Hands-on? Are you doing something with real-life people? Are you actively feeding the hungry? Are you working for peace in a violence and war-crazed world? Are you seeking justice for those who are oppressed? Are you speaking out for those who don't have a voice? That's what James would ask. That's what James is interested in, being doers of the word and not hearers only. I don't know if you remember that old bumper sticker that you used to see around all the time, honk if you love Jesus, right? And I'm here to tell you that anybody can honk, right? If James had bumper stickers, James' bumper stickers would say, have compassion for the hurting if you love Jesus, or speak out for the oppressed if you love Jesus. But frankly, you'd need a much bigger bumper for those kind of bumper stickers. James' plea for compassion is one that is trying to get us to pay attention to orphans, to widows. It makes those who are traditionally the weakest and most vulnerable members of our society the focus of what we do in action. James says, hearing the word is not enough. We must be doers who act. Now, Millard Fuller is the founder of Habitat for Humanity. And it's a pretty mainstream organization now. We have a group that we've got folks involved in a build right now. Bill Yeager is helping out as a leader of that. Many of you have worked on our Habitat for Humanity home or have donated food or something to help the workers. But I got to tell you, when it first got started, it was suspicious. It got accused of all kinds of radical, un-American activities. I mean, what were people to think? I mean, blacks and whites living together in community. They were sharing all of their resources together. Sounds like communists to me, right? Worse, it was 1942. It was in rural Georgia. Oh my gosh, can you imagine what people were thinking? This was craziness. And yet, Millard Fuller had a vision that was drawn from the gospel about what it meant to overcome the economic injustice and the racism that was a part of people's everyday lives back then, and I dare say, still today. And it became part of what Fuller's theology was, which has been called the theology of the hammer, which is part of our stream of thought for today. Millard Fuller said, "I see life as both a gift and a responsibility. My responsibility is to use what God has given me to help people in need." You hear that? And if Millard Fuller is too highfalutin for you, how about Larry Walters? You can't just sit there. Right? You can't just sit there. Not all of us can be Millard Fullers. Not all of us can be Larry Walters. But if you are, call me. I want pictures. But all of us have unique gifts that we can offer to the world. We have a unique way of being in the world. Each one of our circles of influence is unique. It's like no other person's circle of influence. And all of us, if we open up our hearts to what God is calling us to do as individuals, we can make profound differences in the world. We can be proud here as a church of our regular feeding of the homeless. We support Extended Hands Food Bank. We have a wonderful outpouring of generosity whenever we make needs known. But there's something in each of us that is a gift that if we listen and respond, that we can use to not be hearers only, but be doers. If only we open ourselves to the Spirit's nudging. Back in the 18th century, there was a group called the Dunkards. And the Dunkards, they were a pious group of religious Germans, and they emigrated to Pennsylvania in the 18th century. And one day, a man confronted one of these Dunkards and asked him, "Sir, are you saved?" And the man immediately took out a piece of paper and a pencil and started writing stuff down. And in a moment, he gave it to the guy that asked him the question, and he handed it to him and said, "Here are the names and addresses of my family, my neighbors, and the people that I work with. Ask them if I'm saved, because I could tell you anything. Here's to those who do, and may we be among their number." I'd like to invite Jeannie to come up and share a story of one of the doers that she knows. Jim and Jeannie are on their way to Nicaragua on Tuesday for a tour there and to work with churches there. And Jeannie's going to share a little bit about one of their experiences there in Nicaragua.
This is really a gift, David, to be here. When David first invited us, he said, "You know, interested in having us come down here sometime the end of February, beginning of March." I said, "Well, you know, unfortunately, we're already scheduled. We're you know, booked to go to Nicaragua." He says, "Well, you know, we're on the way." So it worked out. I'm really amazed that we're here, and Tuesday morning early, we'll go on from here. But one of the reasons we're going down is we've been singing in Nicaragua for, 30 years. One of the people that has been a gift to us and a companion there who lives there is, her name is Joan Parajon. And she's one of these people who was a doer. I mean, there was no question about that already. She was a doer. She was, had met Gustavo Parajon when they were in college together and married him and went back. She was a U.S. citizen and went back with him to Nicaragua. And he was a medical doctor and a pastor, and she was there directing choirs, and they were working on behalf of the poor. So there's no question Joan was a doer. But it was kind of a prescribed thing. Well, when Jim and I were down there singing each time, part of our trip would be we would go in the prison outside of Managua, a large prison for men prisoners. And often during that time, singing with Somocistas and prisoners of during the war that was going on there. And our Methodist missionaries would be the ones who would take us in there. And they would be our translators because Jim and I are not fluent in Spanish, okay? But we sing in Spanish. So then when this next time when we were in there, and I think it was actually 92, our missionaries had moved on, and they were in Guatemala, and they weren't there. And so we were staying with the Parajones, and they were translating for us and everything. And we said, well, Joan, we need to go to the prison. And she says, oh, no, I don't go in prisons. I think this nice, wonderful woman who's, you know, fiery red hair, you know, who is just not a good thing for a nice Baptist woman to be in a prison. Okay, you just don't go there. Well, and we said, well, no, we have to have a translator. We've got to, you know. So anyway, so she actually went to the prison with us, first time she had ever in her life been in a prison. And things were particularly bad at that point in the prison. I mean, things were really awful conditions. But the singing was incredible. I mean, they just sang with us phenomenally. And they just begged us to come back. And we said, well, I'm sorry, but we cannot come back. We return to the United States. You know, we're not going to be here long. But Joan said, I'll be back. I promise you, I'll be back. Well, we didn't get down there for quite a few years later because of a variety of things. We had a child late in our 40s, and so we weren't traveling quite as much. But anyway, Joan sent us an email and says, I want you to know what you're responsible for. She says, you know, and this is 13 years later, she said, I've been every week to that prison. I have developed a choir there. They will only allow me to have 60 because that's all the size of the room. Okay. And every week for 13 years, that look what you got me into. And I, you know, it wasn't me. It was the spirit, Joan. Sorry, but the nudge happened. And she says, you know, that choir comes out twice a year with their guards and sings in my church with my 60-voice choir, 120 voices singing. Then we go over to the National Theater and we put on a performance there twice a year. And she says, you know, there have been hundreds and hundreds of men who have come through this choir because, you know, they get out of prison and they go on with their lives. And because of the impact that we've had with them having an anchor, a faith community to be part of, in all of this time, in 13 years, only two have ever returned to prison. And one was a mistake, and the other was a guy had gotten into some drugs. You know, so she said, the impact of what's gone on here is phenomenal. Be open to that nudge, all right? That little nudge, we've been hit by it often, and we say, oh, no. But, you know, it's amazing what God can do with us if we're listening. It really is. Do you want the song or do you want to go on to the closing? I'm just aware of time. I'm fine.
You guys want to sing one song or two?
Two. All right. All right. This is one we will be singing down there. It's Psalm 72. You're going to learn some Spanish up here. Jim?
Speak after me. Tu reino es vida. Yeah, it's, God's love is life. Don't say that. I'm just telling you what the translation is. And God's love is truth, or God's reign is truth. Tu reino es verdad.
Tu reino es verdad.
Tu reino es justicia.
Tu reino es justicia.
Tu reino es paz.
Tu reino es paz.
Tu reino es gracia.
Tu reino es gracia.
Tu reino es amor.
Tu reino es amor.
Venga nosotros tu reino, Señor.
Venga nosotros tu reino, Señor.
Come to us, God's reign. God's reign of life, of truth, of justice, of peace, of grace, and love. And this is Psalm 72. Jeannie will read a bit of it, and we'll sing this refrain two or three times. Vida, tu reino es verdad, tu reino es justicia, tu reino es paz, tu reino es gracia, tu reino es amor. Venga a nosotros, tu reino, Señor. Venga a nosotros, tu reino, Señor.
Sing with us. Here we go. Tu reino es vida, tu reino es verdad. Tu reino es justicia, tu reino es paz. Tu reino es gracia, tu reino es amor. Venga a nosotros, tu reino, Señor. Venga a nosotros, tu reino, Señor.
Give the gift of wise rule to the leaders of nations. The gift of just rule to prime ministers. May they judge your people rightly. Be honorable to your meek and lowly. Please stand up for the poor. Help the children of the needy. Come down hard on cruel tyrants. Outlast the sun, outlive the moon, age after age. Bring your reign of truth and justice, of peace and love.
Tu reino es vida, tu reino es verdad. Tu reino es justicia, tu reino es paz. Tu reino es gracia, tu reino es amor. Venga a nosotros, tu reino, Señor. Venga a nosotros, tu reino, Señor.
Leaders will fall down and worship you. Godless nations will sign up to serve you because you rescue the poor. The ones who are destitute. You open a place in your heart for the down and out, and you restore the wretched of the earth. Outlast the sun, outlive the moon, age after age. Bring your reign of truth, of justice, of peace, of love.
Tu reino es vida, tu reino es verdad. Tu reino es justicia, tu reino es paz. Tu reino es gracia, tu reino es amor. Venga a nosotros, tu reino, Señor. Venga a nosotros, tu reino, Señor. Venga a nosotros, tu reino, Señor.